Chapter 6 of Henry Ford's Own Story. This LibriVox recording is in the public domain. Recording by Leanne Howlett. Henry Ford's Own Story by Rose Wilder Lane. Chapter 6. Back to the Farm. The letter from home must have come like a dash of cold water on Henry's enthusiastic plans. He had been thinking in the future, planning, rearranging, adjusting the years just ahead. It has always been his instinct to do just that. "You can't run anything on precedents if you want to make a success," he says today. "We should be guiding our future by the present, instead of being guided in the present by the past." Suddenly the past had come into his calculations. Henry spent a dark day or two over that letter, the universal struggle between the claims of the older generation and the desires of the younger one. There was never any real question as to the outcome. The machine idea has been the controlling factor in his life, but it has never been stronger than his human sympathies. It is in adjusting them to each other, in making human sympathies a working business policy, that he has made his real success. Of course, at that time, he did not see such a possibility. It was a clear-cut struggle between two opposing forces. On one side, the splendid future just ahead, on the other, his father's need of him. He went home. He intended at the time to stay only until his father was well again, perhaps for a month or so, surely not longer than one summer. The plans for the watch factory were not abandoned, they were only laid aside temporarily. It would be possible to run up to Detroit for a day or two now and then and keep on working on plans for getting together the necessary capital. But no business on earth is harder to leave than the business of running a farm. When Henry reached home, he found a dozen fields needing immediate action. The corn had been neglected. Already weeds were springing up between the rows. In the house, his father was fretting because the hired hands were not feeding the cows properly, and they were giving less milk. The clover was going to seed, while the hogs looked hungrily at it through the fence because there was no one to see that their noses were ringed and the gates opened. Some of the plows and harrows had been left in the fields, where they were rusting in the summer sun and rain. There was plenty of work for Henry. At first, from day to day, then from week to week, he put off the trip to Detroit. He worked in the fields with the men, plowing, planting, harvesting, setting the pace for the others to follow, as an owner must do on a farm. He was learning, so thoroughly that he never forgot it, the art of managing men without losing the democratic feeling of being one of them. In the mornings he was up before daylight and out to the barnyard. He fed the horses, watched that the milking was thoroughly done, and gave orders for the day's work. Then the great bell clanged once, and he and all the men hurried into the house, where, sitting at one long table in the kitchen, they ate the breakfast Margaret and the hired girls brought to them, piping hot from the stove. After that they scattered, driving down the farm lanes to the fields, while the sun rose, and the meadows, sparkling with dew, scented the air with clover. The sun rose higher, pouring its heat down upon them as they worked, and a shrill, whirring noise rose from all the tiny insects in the grass, a note like the voice of the heat. Coats and vests came off and were tossed in the fence corners. Sleeves were rolled up, shirts opened wide at the neck. "Phew, it's hot," said Henry, stopping to wipe the sweat from his face. "Where's the water jug? Jim, what say you run and bring it up? Let's have a drink before we go on." So they worked through the mornings, stopping gladly enough when the great bell clanged out the welcome news that Margaret and the girls had prepared the huge dinner their appetites demanded. In the afternoons, Henry, on the little gray mare, rode to the far fields for a diplomatic, authoritative word with the men plowing there, or perhaps he went a little farther and bargained with the next neighbor for a likely-looking yearling heifer. Then back at night to the big farmyard, where the cows must be milked, the horses watered, fed, and everything made comfortable and safe for the night. It was a very different life from that in the machine shop, and Henry Ford thought, when he pored over his mechanic journals by the sitting-room lamp in the evenings, that he was wasting precious time. but he was learning a great many things he would find useful later. Margaret Ford was by this time a healthy, attractive young woman, with all the affairs of the household and dairy well in hand. The social affairs of the community began to center around her. In the evenings, the young men of the neighborhood rode over to propose picnics and hayrides. After church on Sundays, a dozen young people would come trooping out to the farm with her, and Margaret would put a white apron over her best dress and serve a big country dinner. They had a rollicking time in the grassy front yards afterwards, or out in the orchard when the plums were ripe. Late in the afternoon they separated somehow into pairs, as young people will do, and walked the 3 miles to church for the evening services. It may be imagined that the girls of the neighborhood were interested when Henry appeared in church again, now a good-looking young man of 21, back from the city. The social popularity of the Ford place must have increased considerably. On this point Ford is discreetly silent, but it does not require any great effort of fancy to see him as he must have looked then, through the eyes of the Greenfield girls, an alert, muscular fellow, with a droll humor and a whimsical smile. Moreover, the driver of the finest horses in the neighborhood, and one of the heirs to the big farm. However, he is outspoken enough about his own attitude. He did not care for girls. Like most men with a real interest, he kept for a long time the small boy opinion of them. Girls? Huh! What are they good for? He was interested in machines. He wanted to get back to Detroit, where he could take up again his plans for that mammoth watch factory. In a few weeks he had brought the farm up to its former running order, the crops were doing well, and the hired men had learned that there was a boss at the head of affairs. Henry had a little more time to spend in the shop. He found in one corner of it the absurd steam engine he had built 5 years before, and one day he started it up and ran it around the yard. It was a weird-looking affair, the high wagon wheels warped and wobbly, the hybrid engine on top sputtering and wheezing and rattling, but nonetheless running, in a cloud of smoke and sparks. He had a hearty laugh at it and abandoned it. His father grew better slowly, but week by week Henry was approaching the time when he could return to the work he liked. Late summer came with all the work of getting in the crops. The harvest crew arrived from the next farm, 20 men of them, and Henry was busy in the fields from morning to night. When, late in October, the last work of the summer was done, and the fields lay bare and brown, waiting for the snow, Margaret Ford gave a great harvest supper, with a quilting bee in the afternoon and corn husking in the evening. All the neighbors came from miles around. The big barns were crowded with their horses, and rows of them were tied under the sheds. In the house the quilting frames were spread in the big attic, and all afternoon the women sewed and talked. In the evening the men arrived, and then the long supper table was spread with Margaret's cooking. Hams, sausages, fried chickens, a whole roast pig, pans of beans and succotash, huge loaves of homemade bread, pats of butter, cheese, cakes, pies, puddings, doughnuts, pitchers of milk and cider, good things which disappeared fast enough before the plying knives and forks in bursts of laughter while jokes were called from end to end of the table, and young couples blushed under the chaffing of their neighbors. Clara Bryant was one of the guests. Her father was a prosperous farmer who lived 8 miles from the Ford place, and Henry had scarcely seen her that summer. That night they sat side by side, and he noticed the red in her cheeks and the way she laughed. After supper there was corn husking in the big barn, where each young man tried to find the red ears that gave him permission to kiss one of the girls, and still later they danced on the floor of the hay barn, while the fiddler called the figures of the old square dances, and the lanterns cast a flickering light on the dusty mounds of hay. The next week Henry might have returned to Detroit and to the waiting project of the watch factory, but he did not. He thought of Clara Bryant, and realized that his prejudice against girls was unreasonable. End of chapter 6.